This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour
on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
And good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt and I'm in Melbourne.
And my name's Michaela Ortolan and I'm in Wodonga.
And Michaela, today we're looking at, well, something that's actually happening across the state in both suburban Melbourne and in regional Victoria and where you are on the border as well. And that is that so many sporting clubs just haven't bounced back after the last 2 years of lockdowns and restrictions. Many clubs are being forced to merge. And worse still, some clubs are actually looking down the barrel of whether or not they need to shut down altogether. And it's very easy to say, there's a text here already saying, oh no, not more AFL. But this is more than the sport. You know, these a lot of small towns and communities. It really holds them together, and there's more to be lost than just the game itself if clubs do fold.
Absolutely, and it's something that I've been reporting on for quite some time now, particularly post-bushfires and during the pandemic. I played sport myself growing up, and I grew up in Melbourne, but I didn't actually realise how big sporting clubs were and I guess how much it meant to the community until moving out to regional Victoria. Yep. And I've done the rounds of regional towns, and it's the same across the field, you know. They're the heart and soul of the community. And if you take a footy club, a netball club, a basketball club, if you take one of them out of the community, what actually happens? Because it does bring people together. It helps get them through tough times. It's more than just getting on the field and having a run around.
And the reason isn't just because they don't have enough players. That's a part of it, and we'll go into that today as well. But there's also a huge lack of volunteers. And we've done entire programs on the lack of umpires. We'll also touch on that today. But then there are a whole bevy of volunteers. I don't know if that's the correct collective term for a group of volunteers. But those that just make the club tick, you know, from the secretaries to those that are running the canteen, there would probably be a lot of behind-the-scenes volunteers that you don't even know are there, and they're dedicating their own time, their own personal time. A lot of those people are just saying that they're too tired, that they can't come back, they can't make that commitment. So I wonder then how much of a role the volunteers are playing behind some of these clubs being forced to merge or having to fold as well. I mean, I've never volunteered. When my husband played for Albert Park, I think in D grade, I volunteered to work in the canteen, but that was just for free Dim Sims, really.
That's well, everyone's got their motive. I mean, free Dim Sims, whether it's helping the club, we all have our motives. So, but you're absolutely right. They are the backbone of all clubs, and things can't go ahead or things don't happen unless you've got those people in the background sorting through, you know, their registration and dealing with the money and all those kinds of things that keep the club really afloat.
So if you're a volunteer and maybe you've decided that your services, you just don't have the time or the energy if you're playing, what's happening in your community and why is it important to save your club? Is your club struggling? What would happen if your local club folded? What would those knock-on effects for your town or suburb be? Why is it so important to save your sporting club?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
And lots of people are already saying soccer. There's been a big impact, Michaela, for soccer as well. And the collective noun is a splendid of volunteers.
Ooh, I like that. And splendid they are indeed.
And just the things outside of playing that make your club important. You know, why is it important for your local community, whether it be sponsorship? We know that Paul Kennedy will be joining us later, and the amount of work going into mental health is a really big part and a really great place for those conversations, those honest conversations to take place.
Yeah, Rochelle, I'd like to stick on the mental health side of things just for the moment. I know Paul Kennedy will be chatting to us more in depth about it, but we do have Nadia Edwards, who's the operations manager of the Upper Murray Football Netball League. Now, she is based in Corryong. And Nadia, welcome to the show.
Hello, good morning.
How are you going?
Yeah, good. Well, as you know, I am a school teacher, so I'm waiting for the rush of the students to make a lot of noise. So, yeah.
Are you currently in class?
I've actually it's recess and I've just taken a little walk out to where I found somewhere quiet.
Oh, this is teachers, multitaskers at their best. I salute you.
They are fantastic. But, yeah. Nadi, we've got you on the show today because you are based up in Corryong, and Corryong was really at the heart of the 2019-2020 Black Summer bushfires. And the football club played a massive role in the recovery of that. So I wanted to hear from you just about how important the club was to the community there and what sort of things happened on the ground.
Yeah, so our league's actually five clubs, and there were four clubs that were really affected by the bushfires, which were Federal, Corryong, Kudjewar and Tumbarumba, which is across on the New South Wales side. And I guess that footy clubs at the end of the day just bring people together. And the problem is that you were talking about volunteers before and having a splendid of volunteers. Well, those volunteers that kind of manage and man and do all those things for footy clubs were also the farmers that were affected. They were the ones that, you know, operate the local CFA. So there was a lot of a drain on them for starters, but they also know how important it is to have our clubs up and running for our people so that they can go somewhere.
It's incredible. And I know that King Lake back in 2009 during the Black Saturday fires, I mean, football clubs and football grounds, they quite often become places of safety. They become refuges. It's where you go to physically try and protect yourself and your loved ones as well. So the role of what they do just cannot be underestimated. If you're finding that the older volunteers now, and fair enough, once you list all of those things, don't have the time or they just don't have the stamina, what do you do? How do you go about recruiting younger volunteers? I mean, are you starting to spruik this at school at the moment? I mean, what do you do?
Well, you know, you don't try and spruik at school. I have to keep my teaching job separate to my other jobs. But, you know, at the end of the day, we've got this mindset that you always need to be paid for things. And, you know, there are groups of young people that do go and volunteer. I know that our president's only, for Corryong Football Netball Club, he's only in his mid-30s and he's been doing this job for quite a while. And the vice president is my brother, Evan. And so they're all in their 30s, but they come few and far between because I guess people are raising young families, people need work, and, you know, all these things play into the volunteer role. And so, you know, to get on them on board, you do have to kind of offer a lot. And you want to create that club, I guess, where they want to come to. But it's often very difficult when we're so remote as well.
And I do want to highlight your location there for a second, Nadia. Corryong is relatively remote. It's right up, you know, along the New South Wales-Victorian border there. Clubs, as it is, struggle to attract and retain players. But how do you go about it? I know you're having difficulty at the moment with one of the other clubs in your league. How do you go about retracting and retaining players, particularly with such a small league? Could the league potentially, you know, cease altogether if you can't attract these players?
Well, that is always the way it goes. We've just recently had Federal Football Netball Club. We're struggling to fill a senior football side, and our bylaws state that you need to fill the top down. And they came through on Monday night and have been able to source a lot of players. But what they're relying on is people that have been connected to the club before. And I guess when you talk about clubs folding, there is always potential, and we've seen it so much, just not in our league, across all leagues. And one of the reasons is we struggle because of the junior competition. You know, there's not a whole lot around and some go to other districts to play.
There's a text here that says, my family would ordinarily donate tens of thousands to sports clubs in Wodonga, but the lockdowns meant no income and no donations. I hope you acknowledge this, especially in regional lockdowns. When you look at the on-flow effects, and you mentioned farmers before, but if businesses were pushed to the brink or maybe even shut down, or they certainly didn't have any cash flow, and you would rely on donations as well. So there's the financial side, and there would be a lot of clubs listening to this, you know, from all around the state that would be nodding their heads that have lost major sponsors.
Yeah, and like a lot of the local farming families, they are the ones that are the backbone silently. You know, you have steers that you might, you know, allocate out to different farmers, and once you sell them, you collect the cash. Well, some of that came to an end if you'd had your property burned. And I guess that there is the struggle with money, but there is was a catch-22 in that there were some grants available. But those grants were then available more for whole communities rather than sporting clubs sometimes. And we were able to upgrade facilities, but it was not really put into the running of day-to-day clubs, if that makes sense.
Nadia, what happens if your club or, you know, one of the clubs in your league were to fold? Yeah. It's a bit different if we're talking about clubs in Melbourne where, you know, it's so accessible. If one club closes, you can just travel down the road a couple of kilometres and there's another club just around the corner and you can sign up. But in terms of, you know, that community spirit and a place to go and meet and everyone connecting locally, what happens if clubs locally, particularly in these more remote communities, do fold?
Well, if you do fold, there is potential that some young players won't actually be able to travel to those outlying areas due to financial, you know, their financial status. And it just means that, you know, you've got really nowhere to come back to locally to get together, you know. And it is, we've seen, you're going to talk about mental health later. And we've seen all that with our own community. We've lost a few people with lives in the last couple of years. And so to me, they're just that place where you can go on a weeknight. You know, trainings are just as important as the Saturday games because that's when you get together with the people around you to talk about your week and all those things, to unload. So, you know, that will be missed if leagues and clubs were to be folding.
And especially as a teacher, you would understand this, the responsibility of having important mental health discussions can't always fall on the school, and sometimes they're better placed to have at sporting clubs, you know, whether it be football or cricket or soccer or, you know, whatever that may be. Nadia, we heard the school bell go. It sounds like it is the end of recess.
Yeah, and I'm at the back area of the school near the automotive section and I'm waiting. I'm looking at these boys. They are waiting to start something up. And my good old hospitality students are probably waiting for me to make them a coffee because they're lucky.
So what class are you about to go into? What are you about to teach?
I'm about to, so this morning I've had Year 7 English. I'm about to go into hospitality, which is a TAFE program.
Home ec is what we called it. It was always...
Yeah, well, this is... No, this there is home economics, but this is the one that you get, like, your certificate to in hospitality.
Fantastic.
I'm a trainer and assessor.
What are you cooking today? Cake?
No, we're just going to do poor old theory today. Uh-huh. But I'll make
the important stuff.
Coffee. Yeah.
I'll put an order in for a coffee as well, I think. I'm almost due for one.
Yeah.
Good on you, Nadia. Wonderful to speak with you. Wish you and your club all the best.
Yes, thank you very much.
That's Nadia Edwards, Operation Manager at the Upper Murray Football and Netball League, also a teacher literally out doing the rounds at the moment. And, you know, Michaela, when we talk about volunteers, that's exactly what Nadia does. And there's a lot of people here saying, you know, Rich and Michaela, you can't keep expecting the same people to give up their time because no one else will put their hand up. And if you don't have these people, it all falls apart. Young ones expect something in return. It's never been a part of their life to volunteer. It's a sad fact. That's from Pete in Geelong. I wonder if that's the case, you know, whether the younger generation, and I'm not trying to bag out younger people here, but whether or not volunteering, they can consider that sort of a part of their lives and how you give back to the community. Maybe you give back to the community in other ways. And if you're not playing sport, what prompts you to volunteer within your cricket club or your soccer club? I mean, someone here is saying, you know, that the role of sports and registration, of which you mentioned before, they were saying it's huge in soccer. So who wants to dedicate their time doing that?
It's an interesting one. I know growing up, my parents always said to me, you know, encouraged me to volunteer. And there were certain things that we did as a family and we gave up our time and volunteered for certain things. So naturally, when it came to sport, I'd often put my hand up for certain things. And, you know, mum and dad did the same and whatnot. But I've got a younger sister who's much younger than myself. And I guess there's a bit of a difference that I see. She's not necessarily one to put her hand up. So I wonder if it is a generational thing and if we will in the future lose those volunteers. Mm. And you're absolutely right. Who takes on the role when these people, you know, get too old to carry on the jobs and need to take a break? Who's left to do them?
And whether or not the focus is always on the players and the money's going towards recruiting players to play in your local club. 1300 222 774. And the flow-on effects, you know, what happens if that club folds? There's a text here from Liz that says, at 58, I joined women's baseball team in Melbourne. Just started the winter season. It's been more fun than I could have imagined. I've made new friends friends, which is difficult as you get older. I'm keeping active on the weekend, whereas I'd usually just have one too many on a Saturday night. Now at the Sunday game, I watch myself. That's from Liz. And baseball's not one that's incredibly popular in, well, around where I am and in Melbourne, but is baseball big up along the border where you are?
I don't think so. Growing up in Melbourne, I did have some friends that played in baseball leagues, but it was an interesting one because it wasn't something that I was overly familiar with, and it's not something you often hear about. It's usually your standard soccer, footy, basketball, netball, all those generic standard sports. But yeah, baseball is an interesting one. But an interesting point you made there was making friends, and I found, you know, a part of my job is moving around the regions and relocating. You know, you've got to get up and move for the job. So I found it really valuable joining certain sporting clubs. It was a great way of meeting people and settling into a community, which can be hard when you're just there for a temporary period of time or you know, or just new in general. And as the text has said, when you get older, it's more difficult to make friends. So it was a good one.
This one, our three kids have always helped referee or umpire their various sports. They also help coach younger teams to help in the canteen, as well as assist with setup, pack down seats, marquees, goals, etc. Many young people do the same in our various sports club. Tennis, netball, all of them. Not sure why there's a suggestion that kids don't help. It's a club culture issue, if so. That's good. I wanted to hear that text because I hate just thinking, well, it's the younger generation. You know,
we can't blame them all the time.
Certainly can't.
But, yeah, when you're talking about volunteers, whether it's young people or, you know, the volunteers that are there, we have been touching on the fact that there has been a shortage. And someone that knows too well about this is Andrew Moore, who's the Regional Director of Umpiring at AFL Goulburn Murray. Now, Andrew, welcome to the show. You know firsthand about the shortage of volunteers across the board. Can you tell us a little bit about what's been happening at the Goulburn Murray?
G'day, guys. I think we're very much the same as across the rest of the state. The volunteers are a little bit less and far between at the moment. And there seems to be not enough people doing too many jobs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and why is that, do you think?
Well, in the umpiring fraternity in particular, we've found through research of the AFL, particularly across the last 2 years, people have found other things to do on their weekends. And instead of spending the whole Saturday, potentially all day Sunday at the footy, they found other things to do, whether it be another job or spend more family time, any of those sort of things. It's drained the pool a little bit.
How do we bring that love for sport and whatnot back into the clubs? How do we encourage people to get back out there? Because they do love the sport. Once you get into it and you get involved, everyone turns up every week. So it's a matter of, you know, rebuilding this sort of appreciation back into the game. But how do we do that?
It's a good question. I don't have any exact answer for that. I know it's I'm in charge of the umpiring part of the AFL Goulburn Murray, and there's all sorts of different programs, whether it be school programs or club-based programs, to help engage different groups and different ages in my circumstance, get into umpiring. But if they're not umpiring, whether they just find their way back to the footy, netball, soccer, cricket, whatever club it is, to put their hands to work.
You mentioned their side jobs, and there's quite a few texts that are coming in saying you've got to give young people a break. You can't be blaming them. They're all, cost of living is so high, so many of them now have to have jobs. And others saying what a ridiculous generalisation that young people aren't volunteering. Combine the hours required for education or the commitment they have to try and earn a living, it may explain why there's fewer of them. You just have to look at any CFA or SES unit in regional Victoria and you'll see plenty of youngsters. If people aren't volunteering at certain clubs, it might be more to do with the culture of the club and how welcome young people are made to feel. That's from Peter. That's sort of two people now that have said maybe it's more of a reflection of the club. Now, I'm certainly not saying that it's a reflection of the Goulburn Murray Club, but, you know, does that need to come into this a little bit, do you think, Andrew?
I think so. If you take it to me personally, if I'm feel welcome the first time I turn up to a club, I'm more likely to go back to it. If you sort of, I'm sure not intentionally, but feel like you're shunted to the to the back of the line or not feel as important as someone else at the club, you're less likely to go back. So inclusion's really important in anything, I think. If you feel included, you're likely to go back and have another go at it.
And I guess the ultimate question, Andrew, is what happens to the leagues and to these clubs if you don't have the volunteers and you don't have the umpires to you know, umpire games?
So where I am in, I'm based in Shepparton, and most of the leagues that we umpire, they're paid umpires. However, if the clubs do have to supply umpires for some grades, and if, for example, the Umpires Association doesn't have enough numbers, then that puts more pressure back onto the clubs to find an extra umpire for a different grade of football. So it's an extra thing that the clubs have to find when, yes, like us, they can be a little bit short on the volunteers as well.
And just finally, Andrew, is it just up to each club individually to make these changes to find these solutions? Or would you like, you know, larger bodies like the AFL for football anyhow, but would you like larger bodies to come in to step in, whether it be with advice or funding in any way to try and help?
I know the AFL in the past year have had a volunteer program to help clubs, if the clubs have reached out to the AFL to help or AFL Victoria. So there is definitely help from the higher authorities, but I think it's a group combined effort. The clubs have to be willing to put out, and the big boys, whether it be the leagues or the clubs, they have to help them out as well. My experience is there is help out there for the clubs if they go looking for it and ask.
There you go. And it is something that we had heard over, you know, during COVID times and whatnot, after we saw a lot of the leagues postponing matches or cancelling seasons, that the AFL would step in and help. But it falls back on the volunteers then, which Andrew just said. Mm. You know, it comes down to the clubs putting their hand up and searching for this help. There's, I guess, is there really a place that makes it easy for them to find this help? Or, you know, are volunteers putting in more time? Does it fall back onto them? But thank you so much for joining us, Andrew. We appreciate your time today.
No worries. Thanks for having me. Great discussion.
That's Andrew Moore. He's the Regional Director for Umpiring at AFL Goulburn-Murray. Michaela, this text, back in the day, kids turned up and you kind of knew which family they were connected to. You wrote in the book at registration if they'd paid for or if you couldn't. You put them on a team list and that was that. Now they're working with children's checks, there's online registration, there's entitlement forms, they're 4 pages long, each of which require price and information and data to be put in. There's input, there's organisation. Registration is huge. It's an actual skilled paid job now. Poor old volunteers have been sidelined, but lots of kids do volunteering in their own clubs through coaching and assisting. And that was kind of what I was thinking earlier, is that, is it too much work? You know, if we're all busy, we're all trying really hard to make ends meet. If it's got harder and if the paperwork, well, no one likes paperwork, surely. And if you do say you like paperwork, then you're lying. You have to be. But, you know, if the paperwork has got too much, but then at the same time, we all want those checks and balances, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is something that I had been hearing on the ground quite a bit of late. There was a couple of system changes within local football clubs, new platforms that they're using, and all the clubs are trying to, you know, wrap their head around these new systems and changes and how they operate. And a few clubs have said that it's just too much for them. Mm. They're putting in extensive amount of work, overtime, you know, on top of the stuff that they're already doing for the club to keep it operating. It's just too hard. So a lot of them are scared that the volunteers that they do have are going to turn around and say, well, look, the workload was a couple of hours a week. Now it's, you know, a couple of hours a day. We just can't do that on top of our paid jobs and everyday life.
And earlier, you know, we were saying maybe it's the young people to blame, but Jeff in Ballarat saying, having been involved in junior football clubs for years now, it was always like pulling hen's teeth trying to get parents to volunteer for tasks like goal umpire, timekeeper, interchange, canteen. I was amazed how many adults lacked any self-confidence to do these simple tasks. Others just expected parents to do these tasks for their children's sporting to take place. That's from Jeff in Ballarat.
On ABC Radio, Melbourne and Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
My name's Rochelle Hunt. I'm in Melbourne. Michaela is with you as well. She is based in Wodonga. Michaela, lots of people saying it's just an enormous workload on country football clubs, volunteers to raise enough money, pay their senior male players and female players in order to remain competitive. An issue for the football club. It's an issue that the football club doesn't like talking about. Well, let's bring in Paul Kennedy. Of course, many of the ABC listeners will know him, ABC journalist, author and local footy coach. PK, how much of it is about, you know, the fear of clubs merging or folding? How much of it is just about a lack of volunteers now beyond the players themselves?
Yes, g'day, Rochelle, and hi, Michaela. Enjoying the discussion. Yeah, there's always a thread about that. And this year, more than ever, I've seen, because I'm involved with Seaford down on the Mornington Peninsula competition. And this year, more than ever, we've really there was a lot of trepidation around player numbers at various clubs, and wondering whether or not we'd get enough players to field the two teams. But also that under 19 age group has really been a problem for a lot of clubs. There's some big clubs down our way that haven't been able to field under 19s teams. And that's a real worry for the future of the game. And I know that it's something that stresses people out. And if you've got sort of around about enough to make a team, but there might be some injuries or indeed COVID playing its part, that adds the stress because people with full-time jobs are spending their weeks trying to find players and do the registration. And, yeah, there's a new registration system, so that's... there's no paperwork, by the way. It's all on these apps. So as long as you remember your password, you're okay. But I recently spent time up at Wangaratta. I know that's COVID's been a big thing as well. I saw the Rovers play against the Wodonga Raiders, and the Raiders couldn't get a reserves team up. So it's even those really big, well-established clubs in big competitions that have had that extra stress this year on top of what it takes to run football netball clubs.
PK, you said that some teams are struggling to field reserves or under-19s, and we heard from Nadia earlier who said that in their particular league, and I'm not sure if it's across the board or if it's just certain leagues, but you have to field a team from the top level and work your way down. So if you can't field a seniors team but you have enough for a reserves, one of the sides ends up missing out. Is that should we see a change in this sort of system just so that it becomes a matter of just forming a team, and if you've got enough plays to form this team, then the game can go ahead?
Yeah, I think that the guidelines that put out this year across the board, most leagues are adopting, have got those. So there's a few rules there, like the ones you mentioned. The other one is that you can play with 16 aside, and it's all really coming off the last 2 years, or last year, because 2020 was a write-off, but 2021, if fixtures got mixed up and you couldn't field a team and there was a forfeit, then that would make the competition stall, or it would make it completely lopsided. So I think it's all about making sure that the first team gets a game, so that the fixture goes on, and at the end you've got something like a normal season. So I understand those. I think those changes are fairly reasonable. And if you've got COVID, there's a bunch of players who have got COVID in our club this week, and going into tonight, Thursday night training and selection, we really don't know what it looks like. So we'll turn up
it
to training
happens,
tonight to see
My
whether we can get three teams.
My daughter's basketball club, the other week, one of the little players, these are like under 10s, but they only had their opposition only had four players. Our girls, there was like eight. And I was like, all right, two of our girls, turn their tops inside out, play for the other side. Whatever it is, you've got to find a way to make it.
Did you give them your best players, Rochelle?
No, but they didn't want to do it.
Of course not.
People didn't want to do it. And of course, no, you hold on to your stars. Hey, PK, stay with us. Anthony Sinclair and Iris. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, how you going?
Good. What did you want to say?
Oh, look, we're just listening to this with interest because we're volunteers with football and basketball clubs. And we're not having issues with numbers per se, but what we're having issues is over time is people and the parents particularly not being involved as volunteers. And in essence, I think what committees need to do is they need to make policies to say that if you register for a club, your child to play in a club, what you actually are doing is you're volunteering to be involved in that club as a family. And so, and look, an interesting example the other day is, my wife is the uniform coordinator for our basketball club, and we're trying to get uniforms organised for this weekend's games. And one of the parents, when they were contacted to organise these uniforms, told her that it wasn't convenient for her to come and organise to pick up a uniform. And it's sort of that, like that thing of going, you know, my wife's volunteering to provide this service for your children, but you're not prepared to put in the time to come and actually interrupt your life about it. So it's really quite interesting. And we really just need to have committees who are just saying, part of the process of registration is you are volunteering to be involved.
And I like that idea, Anthony. I know there's a few clubs who have rotating canteen rosters. So you know that if you sign up, you're going to be on the canteen on certain weeks. So it would be a great idea to get clubs or parents or players involved in volunteering. Anthony, with that, did you find that the drop-off in volunteers came post-COVID, or was it something that was being experienced, you know, during or before COVID as well?
No, this has been an ongoing issue that we've had we're very fortunate. We live in a very sort of socioeconomically well-off area. And so it's actually just it's a behavioural trait of the parents involved who seem to think that the clubs are there for them as opposed to them being involved
being
in
a
making
part
sure
of it.
The clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, we've had some run-ins with parents over time of actually just calling them out and saying, you need to be involved. You can't just sit there and expect that everyone else is going to provide volunteer time for your kids if you're not prepared to do that as well. So it's
and there's so much to it as well, Anthony, isn't it? Like running around and picking up uniforms and doing all of that. You raise really good points, Anthony, and I like that. It's a really good suggestion. Robin in Croydon says, I retired from full-time work back in 2014. I was elected to the position of secretary at my local suburban cricket club. I had plans which had prompted my retirement, but after 2 years as secretary, I had to resign. I'd replaced one full-time job with another, and I had no time for myself. Each day, I had to log on to club emails. I had to work through some of the most urgent issues. That's from Robin in Croydon. PK, is it too much for, I guess, a small group of people doing too much work as opposed to spreading it out, like Anthony just said?
Yeah, definitely. There's a really easy way around with the junior sport that maybe the committees don't need to have that on their plate as well to organise for every individual team to get the tiny little jobs done. Team managers are really important. If you've got a parent that can be a team manager of, say, the under 17. So when my experience is when you coach the little ones, you know, the nines and tens, the parents are always around. By the time they get to 17s and they can ride to training, the parents aren't there so much. But if you've got a great team manager who can just make a Facebook page, invite all the parents, and then just allocate jobs, you'll find that those parents are able to, and they're willing to help out.
But it's a skill,
though,
PK.
Yeah, they don't know how to volunteer, and they need to be asked.
It's a skill, though, isn't it? I look at some of the mums that are, they're just so organised, and I'm in awe of them. I'm always the one at pickup or whatever going, what do I have to know? What have I forgotten?
That's right. You
know?
That's right. So if you've got someone who's really, usually you've got one or two people that are pretty keen to do a little bit more. So if they take on that team manager role, even if a couple of them do, then they can herd the rest of the parents in and get those jobs filled. They could make a roster.
Make people like me do more.
Yeah. And I think
I'm the same as you, Rochelle. I am not organised at all. So whenever it comes to anything like this, I'm the first to take a step back and be like, no, you guys control. You look like you know what you're doing. We've got Anthony from Northcote who's called through now. Anthony, Tony, my apologies. What's your experience, Tony?
This is a story from over 40 years ago in my late 50s, but back then we still had the same issues with sometimes teams not having enough players and we had to lend players to the other team for the game to go ahead. I was not a very good player. I was warming the bench and didn't get much game time. So I was one of the players that was lent to the other team because you lend them your worst players, let's face it. But playing for the other team meant that I could just relax and enjoy myself. I was under no pressure because it didn't matter if I played badly. And I was best on ground. And I gained the confidence for the rest of my underage playing days. And I was one of our best players from that day onwards because it just gave me that confidence to play.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, it sort of leans in to this, and there's a text from Brendan that says, thank you so much for this conversation. I think you're identifying something that's more of a social issue, whether it be young people, parents who need to get involved for the sake of their kids, the social fabric of their town. It takes a village. There's so much to gain by doing these things, but so many of us are under great financial pressure as well as raising a family. We don't have the time or the energy or the struggles. But, you know, listening to you there, Tony, and talking about, you know, I mean, what Brendan said, it's a social fabric of our town and it takes a village. All of those things that we need to take into consideration that are bigger than the paperwork or whatever it may be.
And you realise that playing the game is more important than winning sometimes.
Yeah, all the time. Hopefully it would be all the time. Tony, thank you. John's been waiting in Chelsea. Hey, John.
Yeah, hi. Like I said, I've been involved with the Chelsea Soccer Club for quite a while. You know, going back a few years, we probably had about 300, 350. This year we've got just over 500 players, starting from goal kick right through to masters. So we covered the whole sort of age bracket. But just in terms of, but the volunteers hasn't been exponentially higher, if you know what I mean. Like, even though we've got more families, more players, but we're not finding the volunteers at all coming through. So, and it's always the usual hardcore parents that are helping out. And, you know, light hands, more hands make light work, but, you know, it's the other way around here. And I'll just give you my example. You know, I was president there for the last 7 years. This year I'm vice president, but the last 2 or 3 years I haven't had any kids at our club. You know, so I'm there because I'm, you know, I love the club and I love what I do. But, you know, it's otherwise there's no one else stepping in or stepping up to sort of take on the roles. And I'm, you know, every weekend now for the next 6 months, I'm at the club starting from Saturday morning, setting up the ground, Sunday morning, setting up the ground marshalling most of the day, Friday night doing the bar. You know, you need, and talk about, you know, before you used to volunteer, if you want to do the bar now, you've got to have an RSA. If you want to do a canteen, you know, we don't have a canteen because we just don't have the volunteers. But you need to have a food handling licence. In the past,
do you
didn't
really
need that.
You can't just rock up and volunteer in the canteen
you
now.
Need to, someone needs to be there that has a food handling licence. Otherwise, council gets funny with you. You know, so there's a lot of barriers as well. You know, like working with Children's Check, you know, you want to find coaches, volunteers, they all have to be working with Children's Check, has to be filed. Now that, you know, coaches and volunteers at the club have to be aware of, you know, if you suspect any mental abuse, you have to report it. So it's no longer like your previous caller said that, or callers said, you know, you now have to, before you just used to rock up and that was it. Now you have to play a lot. There's a lot more accountability that is required from volunteers, and that's what's sort of scaring them off. Yeah. And unfortunately, there's a few of us left there holding the baby, so to speak. So it's getting tough.
Absolutely, and it just seems like there is so much more work involved in volunteering and organising and running clubs these days compared to what it used to be like when, you know, when I was a kid and used to play. But PK, what can we, should we be changing this? Should volunteers have, you know, less job to do? And it should be a fun job. When you're volunteering, you should enjoy doing it and it shouldn't be like a second job. How do we sort of manage that and, you know, make it more fun like it used to be?
Yeah, well, we shouldn't probably forget that the history of you know, safety of children is really important too. So I wouldn't be complaining about having to get a working with Children's Check. That's number
absolutely.
One.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because the safety of kids is the most important thing in junior sport. But I understand the complaints about all the different regulations. So what I would say is that volunteering is fun. I don't think Tony would do it if you didn't quite enjoy doing all of those things. I think when it gets too much, when you have to do everything, that's when it becomes a problem. So if you're keen on volunteering, but you don't want to be the secretary or be the treasurer and do those things for 12 months of the year, that's fine. But I think it's probably on all of us to explain just how important it is to be part of a group. And sports clubs can be great. I read a great story by Paul Amy this week. He wrote a story about Damien Cupido, who's a former Brisbane and Essendon player who's now playing country footies out at Shepparton. And such is the draw of this footballer. They sold 160 meals in the kitchen last week in a local football club near Shepparton. you know, that's really important, and that's worthwhile. And just to be around a team or a club that's buzzing and churning out the meals on Thursday night, yes, there's a lot of work involved, but that's a good thing to be a part of. And you can feel good about being coming together and all the rest of it.
Mm.
And I did a story this week, published a story about clubs that, and Gippsland Way, but all over Australia really, are doing more for mental health. And the things that volunteers are doing now to provide support and make people less lonely, all of those things. There's a great payoff there with volunteering and being a part, even a small part in a club.
Yeah.
You help other people, and that's great for your health. It's great for your overall health as you get older, and even as a young person, to understand that giving to other people enriches your life as well. So maybe it's a storytelling thing where you know, we explain the difficulties of everyone doing everything and getting stressed mm-hmm. out. And top that up with explaining just the richness that comes through volunteering and being a part of a cause.
Absolutely. And I know, I mean, you're filling in for Sammy J on Breakfast for our Melbourne listeners tomorrow, and I know you're going to go into detail on that, on the mental health and the importance of that mental health conversation.
You better
go to bed right now, PK. So it's, you know, when people say, well, what does it matter? It's a sport. When you're looking at them as spaces for mental health conversations, let's go to Michelle. She's in Surry Hills. Hi, Michelle.
Oh, hello there. I'd just like to talk about being a team manager. I'm a team manager for my child's young footy team. And there was a discussion before about that somehow team managers look more organised, or that we're the ones who might get things organised and get things done. and I'd like to assure you that's not the case. And in fact, that's the kind of attitude that would be good if we could change that, because sometimes we're the last one standing. So we are relying on other people not to think that we are somehow more organised than the rest of you, because I can assure you that we are not.
And do you feel like there is too much pressure put on you? I mean, there's a lot of reaction on text around this. For example, it says, my wife's a nurse and I work weekends. We find it hard to volunteer. So what should I do? Should I withdraw my children because I can't help week in, week out? And that's obviously, you know, a fairly legitimate reason if you're working weekends. But do you find that there people just aren't willing to come in and help, or they think, you know what, Michelle's got it. She's all over this. We don't need to worry.
No, there are lots of people who are willing to help, but the numbers and the roles that we have to fill are just so large I'd say that one of the problems that we have is it's the behaviour of teams and families, and everyone's under stress at the moment, and it would be easier for everybody, but particularly the volunteers with the heavy roles, if behaviour on the field and off the field was, you know, if we took a little bit more care with that, about how we treated each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And you made a point about, you know, those smaller jobs that people can be doing. We've got Kieran from Storwell on the line. And Kieran, what are some of those smaller jobs that you can be putting your hand up for?
Oh, you can do anything. You can cut oranges. I mean, that doesn't take much out of your time. When I was a youngster, everyone who played in the team, they had to wash the jumpers, like their parents had to wash them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that goes on anymore, those old wool ones. But, yeah, I mean, for the parents that are working on the weekend, maybe they can do that, you know.
I mean, they're two really good examples. I mean, I can remember my husband bringing home all of his footy clubs, and they were, Kieran, the old woolen jumpers. And we had this dodgy old hand-me-down washing machine, and I thought, there is no way that we're going to be able to wash all of these jumpers. And we took them to the laundromat. But you're right, they're two kind of just old school basic ways to help. PK, are people still cutting oranges and washing jumpers?
Yep. We've got a roster. So our team manager in the under-17s, I think we're doing it, I don't think we're washing the jumpers in the 10s, but or the 14s, but yeah, the under-17s, we've got a roster. Our team manager is, and just the issues out, doesn't need to name the parents or the carers, but they put out a roster and name the child. So then someone from that child's family needs to be, I think we've got a guy who does the goal umpiring, loves it. So he does, that's one job out of the way. But there's a timekeeper, there's a ground marshal, and there's three or four others. And once that roster's done, I find that the people will will organise themselves and do that. So, yeah, roster's good. But, yeah, they still do the oranges. They bring the snakes, you know, they bring the sugary treats.
Oh, my favourite. I'm a sucker for sweets.
I don't think the kids need all those sweets, but then again, I don't want to be too much of a killjoy. So, yeah, a bit of fruit, a couple of snakes, that's okay. And, washing the jumpers would be good. They don't get as dirty as they used to back in the day.
Really?
All the grounds tend to be in better shape. Yeah, it's not as muddy as it used to be. So,
they were putrid. And the heavy, especially when it rained, and the heavy woolen jumpers the mud. Oh, man, that has just brought back memories.
Not as much of an issue, but, I think if you spread the load and maybe some communication too, if your team manager sends out a note and says, by the way, I look like I've got this all under control. I haven't. I need your help.
Yeah. And PK, the aliens have taken over your Thailand, but we've lasted through to the end. We'll let you go and rest up as you take to the microphone from 5:30 tomorrow. But thanks for your time as always.
Thanks, PK.
Let's go have good Paul Trappiani. He's the president of the Bundoora Footy Junior Club. And we've been talking a lot about regional Victoria here and lots of suburban clubs that are struggling. How is it at Bundoora at the moment, Paul? Are you struggling for volunteers?
No different to any other year, I don't think. I've heard a lot of your callers and the comments and, you know, a lot of people complain any specific issue, but I think it's a variety of things. I've been involved with the club since 2008 and I always seem to think that it was easier to get volunteers in 2008 because not everybody had mobile phones and email on their phones. So the protocol was that parents would meet in the room before the game. And if you said that you don't want to wave the flags, everybody knew that you weren't waving the flags. Now people just don't answer their phone or they're out of range or they didn't get your message. And there's every excuse in the world, but it's always the same people that come up to the team at the start of the game and say, can I help? And it's the same people that never help every week.
Why is that? I mean, there's a text here and it says name withheld and it says, you know, I volunteer for everything for my kids and I'm a single parent. I work as a full-time teacher as well as studying. The parents who say they're too busy are always the first to complain if things aren't to their liking. I mean, I guess this leans into a show I did a few weeks ago with Paul Kennedy, who just joined us, that just looks at that rivalry that comes in and the fights and some of the toxic behaviour that comes into local clubs. And is that because sometimes we just take other people's time for granted, do you think, Paul? Does that play into it a little bit?
Well, I think so. I think that I know in my situation that when I first arrived at the club, I seemed to think that the committee and the canteen and all of the jobs ran like clockwork because those people loved doing it and I didn't want to enter their environment and say that I could do something. And I think that's what happens. A lot of people, especially the new ones to the club, they just don't think that they're cut out to be a, timekeeper or whatever. But in essence, none of us are cut out to do anything. We're all learning every week. But the problem that I find is that, like that person said, the same people sort of hide behind what they have to do during the week. Your earlier caller said that somebody works every Sunday, but the club runs virtually 7 days a week. Any footy club does. And it's always the same people that are filling holes.
It goes back to those team managers acting or, you know, putting on that front that they do have it so under control and organised. We've got John from Tarawin Lower, if I pronounce that right. John, thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning. I've got a couple of issues. My biggest issue is with the big AFL that I think takes all of regional Victoria for granted. I actually started with other people, a football club in 1989 in Tarawin Lower, and we're still going strong. But the issue that I have is that somewhere along the line, we're forgotten because, for instance, when you get junior football and Auskick, their parents have to pay $90 to be a part of Auskick, and the football club sees none of it, yet we supply the umpires, the trainers. Everybody else is supplied by the football club, and we do that for the good of the kids, and it costs parents $90 to be a part of it. It just seems so, and we try to get stuff from the AFL and it's a waste of time.
what should the AFL be doing to help these country clubs? We know, John, that they are struggling, and particularly it's been highlighted after COVID that they are struggling a lot. What needs to be done by the AFL? Should they stand in and offer more, you know, is it financial support? Is it more initiatives like sending players out to clubs? What sort of things can they be doing?
Look, I think all of the above. I think probably the biggest issue that country football clubs have, it's a very interesting situation at the moment. If we were to get a women's team, we would be overrun with funding, and that's what happens. We're not in a demographic that can produce a women's team, so we've got netball teams. And just getting everybody on the field every week is a pretty big and huge expense for a football club.
Yeah.
But we don't get any support because I think they're so tied up in their elites, like their under-19 competition. I would suggest that there's one easy way to fix that. Under-19s aren't junior footballers. Go back to the very old days when we had under-14s, under-17s, and then they were not adults.
And it's interesting too, as a life member of the Tarwin Football and Netball Club, you know, hopefully those ideas and thoughts that you have, John, you know, are listened to at least. Michaela, this is something that you started. Obviously, you're in Wodonga, you're up on the border. This is something that you've been covering for some time, but it turns out it's across the entire state, really, isn't it? This is something, it's not about players. It's not about having enough players all of the time, although that is an issue, but it's behind the scenes. It's the canteens. It's the secretaries. It's the team managers. All of that stuff that makes it work.
Absolutely. It's across the board, which is quite interesting. And I feel like the more we talk about it, the more problems or, you know, issues we kind of uncover as we speak about it. But my one taker from this is to put my hand up for things. So, yeah, any
canteen,
little thing, cutting,
you and I,
yes,
in the
absolutely.
Canteen.
We'll get them dim sims.
How many dim sims and snakes do you reckon we'd eat?
I would polish them off before half time, I reckon.
Michaela Ortolum, as we said, joining us from our Wodonga studios. Thank you so much. I'll speak to you soon, hopefully. That's it for the Conversation Hour today. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget you can always subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast. You can go to the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts, and that way you'll never miss an episode and you can share it with your friends and family. And if you have an idea or someone or something you want us to talk about, you can email us, conversationhour@abc.net.au. We always read those emails. Take care and speak to you soon.